Hey, welcome to the Get to Know Nashville podcast, where we're telling the stories of people and businesses in and around Nashville who make this city awesome. My name is Josh Kennedy. This podcast is an extension of our online video documentary series, and we don't always have the opportunity to fit every single interesting piece into the video. So this podcast is a way that we can share with you an extended version of the interview as well as bonus content. On today's podcast, we're talking with Emily Mills, an illustrator who grew up in Colorado and found her way to Nashville for the artistic community. Emily is a rock star illustrator who's been doing amazing work for some amazing companies, and she currently flies around the country doing something called sketchnoting or graphic recording. We had a blast sitting down chatting with Emily, and we hope you'll enjoy the interview. If you want to find out more about Emily or get to know Nashville, go to gtkn.tv or follow us on Instagram or Facebook at Get to Know Nashville. Now, let's go to the interview.
Posture. This is how I normally sit.
So we'll start with an easy one. We'd love to have some sort of intro statement. Just, I'm Emily Mills, and I'm a sketchnote artist, whatever you want to say there. Whatever, or an illustrator, whatever you feel like you are.
Cool. I'm Emily Mills, and I'm an illustrator.
Perfect. See, I told you that was easy.
Yes, nailed it. So, first try.
Can you start by just telling me a little bit, like, how you ended up in Nashville?
Yeah. Let's start there. Well, it goes a little farther back than Nashville. I grew up in Colorado, but I graduated college in the recession, and so finding a design job in a recession was pretty much impossible, especially in a big city like Denver. So I expanded my search to nationwide and ended up in Texas because the Texas economy is always great. But after a while, I was in a really small town and there wasn't any career growth. And so I opened my horizons again, trying to find something that would suit me. And I made a list of five things that I wanted in my next city, and Nashville checked all the boxes. So I just looked for jobs here and then I moved.
So what were some of those boxes?
One was an airport. I enjoy traveling, and now I travel for work, so it's really important that I live near an airport. One was outdoorsy things. So growing up in Colorado, I did a lot of hiking and outdoor activities, and I couldn't really do that in Texas anymore because it was too hot, and I'm not built for that kind of environment. Another one was healthy food options. So living in a small town in the middle of nowhere, Texas, there weren't any health options other than just the organic section at the local grocery store. And I'm not like a Whole Foods junkie, but I like having the option of healthier options. And another one was creative community. And another one was career opportunity. So Nashville just checked all those boxes.
So what kind of creative community have you found in Nashville?
The creative community that I found in Nashville has been really diverse, and it's almost so diverse that it's hard to pick. So there's groups for painters, there's groups for illustrators, there's meetups, there's creative mornings, there's lecture series, the whole range from academic to I just do this as a hobby. You can find it here in Nashville.
That's very true. You can. It's fun. So one of the things you have on your website that I love is the phrase, I didn't stop drawing after childhood.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. Can you talk a little bit about that and how, and just like what being an illustrator means to you, what drawing, even just pulling it down even more simply, what drawing means to you and just how it makes you feel?
Yeah. So I always say I never stopped drawing after childhood because so many people draw when they're kids, and that's a form of creative expression and showing people what their ideas are. But then along the way, someone tells them your drawings suck or you're not good at this. And it's either a peer or it's a parent. So it's someone that they respect. And no one wants to be made fun of. So a lot of people have that drawing ability shut down, and they might never pick up a pen or pencil again unless they're forced to. And so luckily, I just never had that. Everyone liked my drawings, and I just formed that natural ability over time with practice, art lessons, and so that's kind of what I get back to now is I have a newsletter called Illustration is for Everyone because I think it is.
That's cool. And would you say that applies to other things as well outside of drawing as far as just keeping that inner child alive?
Totally.
And
so
what do you think people, for other reasons, shut that down as far
yeah,
as outside of drawing?
I think mostly I think as kids, we all have innate talents or abilities or passions. And then somewhere along the way, someone says you're not good at it or someone else is better than you. For me, that wasn't drawing, but it is for a lot of other people. But for other people, it could be athletics, it could be sports or clubs, or it could be writing or even math. Like a lot of people say they suck at math just because they had a math teacher in second grade say you didn't do very well on this test. And so it just kind of planted that seed of a lie in their mind that they can't do something. So everyone has these abilities. We've just told ourselves lies our whole lives that we can't do it.
So when did you first discover that you were gifted in illustration?
I don't think, I wouldn't really call it gifted in illustration, but...
I'm sure there's a time where I'm actually good at this.
Yeah, so in third grade, my art teacher had us cut out little squares of wrapping paper, and she told us to repeat that pattern three times. So we had a square of a pattern. So our job was to just draw the pattern, and mine was jungle animals. So I was focused on patterning. I was focused on drawing my animals perfectly, and I studied the zebra stripes and where the lines lined up and everything. And I looked around, and my peers in third grade, like, I didn't like it. And I was like, wow, I'm way better at this than everybody else. And that, I think that's when it first clicked, was, okay, I'm an art kid now. And this is my one thing that I can be good at. I think every kid is looking for that one thing that they can be good at. So from third grade on, that's when I started doing more creative things like art lessons.
So have you saved any of your drawings as a kid?
I have saved them, or rather my mom has saved them, but I haven't seen them in years. They're stuck in a big Rubbermaid bin in our basement somewhere.
So what do you think it is about drawing specifically that kind of connects people to their childhood? So for, like, I have a 3-year-old daughter, mm-hmm. and I haven't colored in probably 15 years or longer, you know, and now that I have a 3-year-old, she loves to color, so I really enjoy coloring with her, and there's just something about it that makes me feel like a kid again. What do you think it is about drawing and stuff like that that connects people to their childhood?
I think drawing connects people to their childhood because it's using a lot of different senses. It's using your brain and your creativity, and it's using your hands for that kinesthetic feel. And it's usually with somebody else, like your daughter or your kids, anything like that. So drawing is usually community-based. That's how we learn. Like, we go to art school and we go to class together. I think drawing is also a way that people communicate their ideas most clearly. So there have been studies done where illustrations and pictures are noticed in milliseconds, where if you read a paragraph, you can't get the gist of the idea in milliseconds. So that's why illustration is so powerful, because it's the human language, is what I like to say. Drawing is the human language because it transcends age, it transcends gender, location, language, just everything. If you go to France and you don't speak French, you can show a drawing of the Eiffel Tower to someone and they'll tell you where to go because they understand you.
That's a great example. You've given that answer before, I feel like.
Yeah. I've written about it.
I
think it's in my book, actually.
So talk a little bit how you got from drawing as a hobby to a profession.
My road from drawing as a hobby to a profession was a little windy and not straight at all. So I started drawing as a kid with art classes and just doing my own personal doodling and learning to draw, like getting how to draw books. But then when I got older, around high school, people started saying, all right, you got to pick a career now. Drawing isn't really a thing that you can make money at. And like I said, I graduated around the recession. So the economy around high school was good, but it was about to crash. And so people were really focused on making money and making good career choices. So I didn't have anyone in my life telling me you can be an illustrator, you can be a freelancer, you can earn a living doing what you love. So I just went to college, and I thought my options were graphic design or art education. Those seemed to be the only degree options where I could still do art and earn a living. And I'm not really into teaching kids, so I chose graphic design, not even knowing what it was. I just knew it was something in the art department, and so as long as art was a part of it, I was okay with it. So I was a graphic designer for about 8 years through college and then after, and drawing just kind of came back to haunt me. So I had been cartooning through high school and college, and after I graduated, I just stopped drawing. Otherwise, unless it was for a logo or something graphic design related, and I just missed it. So eventually, someone who used to work with me remembered some drawings that I would do on my whiteboard outside of my office, and they asked if I could come do a whiteboard video for them. And I said, sure, I can draw pictures. So started doing whiteboard videos, and then a company called The Sketch Effect saw my work online, and they said, hey, we make these professionally, and we do other drawing stuff too. Do you want to work for us? And that was a no-brainer answer. It's like, I get to draw for a living? Yes, I didn't know I could do this. So I kind of burnt the candle at both ends, doing graphic design and using my vacation to work for The Sketch Effect. And eventually it just came to a head where I went freelance, and now I'm all in on illustration.
That's good. I see. I have a lot of questions. So.
I have all the answers.
Good.
I hope.
What are some things that you did early on to hone in your craft as you started moving into like professional?
Mm-hmm. I still feel like I'm perfecting my craft. I have actually never taken a formal figure drawing class, so I feel like that's an area where I'm really weak. I don't know the form of bodies very well, but for my work, it doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be recognizable. And so I feel like I have to learn because my craft doesn't require it. It's just a bonus. So that's one example. I like learning on my own time because I want to be a better illustrator. I learn from my husband, who's an illustrator as well, and I learn from friends. I have drawing meetups, and we'll go to coffee shops and draw together and learn from each other. And I like reading online. I like taking online courses, and it's just because you don't have to take college classes or get a master's to be better at something. You just have to have that spirit of education and want to learn yourself.
Do you remember your first paying job as an illustrator? And how did that make you feel?
Oh, yeah. My first paying job as an illustrator was actually the cartoonist job for the school paper in college. And I think it was maybe $50 a cartoon, so 3 or 4 times a month. That's a lot of money for a college student. And I thought, I didn't put as much effort in. It was just a one little square panel cartoon. And I was like, I just made $50 for doing this. And I loved every second of it. This is amazing. So it was a fulfillment of a childhood dream to be a cartoonist. But I still didn't have that that reality check of you can actually do this for a living. It doesn't have to be a side hobby.
Yeah, that's cool. So when did you, and you alluded to this a little bit already, but when did you feel like it was really, the ball was really starting to get rolling and like, okay, I can do this for a living, and like explain some of those emotions of how they made you feel.
Yeah.
Just the excitement of fulfilling a childhood dream.
My first freelance job as an illustrator was actually within a week of me quitting my job. And so I felt like the ball was rolling. Things are happening for me. Okay, I can actually do this. But it was a book illustration project. And I think there were about 50 to 80 illustrations. I can't remember exactly. And so just coming out of a work environment to something that was completely different with a lot of moving parts to it was not a rude awakening, but it was a good wake-up call, like, all right, this is serious. You have to have your stuff together. You have to be organized. You have to work with the client and produce really good work so that you can get more work. It made me feel really excited because not everybody gets to illustrate for a book. A lot of people want to illustrate for books but never get to, and so I felt really blessed to have that opportunity in the first place, much less get paid for it. Within a week of me quitting my job, it was like, okay, the stars are aligning. I'm going to do this.
That's cool. So are there any clients that you'd love to brag about on camera that you got to work with? Like just companies or people or? It's your chance to brag.
Yeah, but do I want to? I've worked with Dave Ramsey's company. I've gotten to work with a few things on Michael Hyatt's team. I've gotten to work with Huge IO, which teaches Kanban. I've gotten to illustrate books. I have 2 books coming out. One is my own and another is for a friend, which is coming out in November. And so I don't know how to answer that question because I don't like bragging very much. It's like, it's not really about the person as much as it is about the project.
Um, Was there a big break along the way that really helped propel you forward? Was that the Sketch Effect?
Yeah.
Reaching out to you?
Yeah, I think my big break was when the Sketch Effect reached out. So I was in the process of moving to Nashville when they reached out. I had just moved here. It was maybe a month or two when they reached out and said, hey, we want to work with you. So I kind of felt at odds because I just started working for this company and then I had the Sketch Effect asking for me to work with them. So I felt like, well, I think I can do both for a little while, but this isn't going to last forever. And I knew that signing the paper and my contract with the Sketch Effect saying, all right, I'm going to work for you. I just kind of took a step of faith and knowing that something was going to go down. It had to be the Sketch Effect or my day job. And I was hoping it would be the day job. And that's what happened.
That's cool. That's fun when that works out. So can you talk about like a major creative or professional challenge that has come up and as you're moving towards where you're at now and how did you overcome that and just talk about some of the emotions as you're going through that?
That's a good question.
I'm sure it wasn't all gravy.
No. I think
just moving and the uncertainty. I know when we talked on the phone, you said there's a lot of uncertainty at certain points and just maybe allude to that a little bit.
Yeah. One challenge has been marketing myself as an illustrator. With a graphic design background, that's really safe to say I'm a designer. Oh, and I do illustration because everyone needs a designer for something, whether it's a website or a brochure. Everyone knows what a graphic designer is, but not everyone understands what an illustrator can do. So branding myself as an illustrator felt really risky because it felt like I was cutting off a lot of possibility. And I would have to do a lot of work to educate people. This is what an illustrator can do for you. And this is the value of education. This is the value of illustration. Mm-hmm. So another thing that comes along with that is the value of illustration being pricing. So I charge a lot of money for what I do because illustration is so effective and the value is so priceless, really. So you have to put a price on your work. And a lot of people think, oh, well, you've been drawing since you're a kid. It's so easy for you. This should only cost me $20 to $50. And it's my opportunity to educate them, like, no, this is really valuable. And it took me a lifetime to do it in 5 minutes. And that's why it's effective.
Can you explain? So from my understanding, a lot of the Sketch Effect is the sketch notes. Can you explain to people what sketch notes are?
Yeah, so I do a thing called sketch notes. And it's exactly what it sounds like. It's combining illustration with information. So sketch notes are listening to something live or experiencing something live and taking notes in the moment with both drawings and words.
When did you realize that sketch noting was something that really combined all the things that you're good at? Because I feel like it does from the outside looking in. With your design background, drawing background, how do you feel like that combines all those things? And when did you realize that it was something that aligned with your abilities?
I think I didn't realize that sketchnoting and graphic recording and everything we do at the Sketch Effect was so perfect for what I do and what I care about after I was actually hired. So when I was hired, they said, here's the work we're going to be doing, and this is what it looks like, and we're going to train you on how to do that. It was really exciting because it's drawing for a living, but it didn't really click with me until maybe a couple months after working with them and doing gigs more consistently because I realized, I get to travel and I love traveling. This is great. I get to draw and I get to be trained by a master illustrator. This is great. I get to go to conferences for free and learn from people who get paid lots of money to be there. This is great. I'm getting a free education and I'm being paid to be there.
Can you talk a little bit more about sketchnoting for people that wouldn't know, like where that would be used? Like you mentioned conferences, but can you talk about that a little more?
Yeah, so there's a wide variety of visual communication. There's sketch notes, which is usually a smaller format on a piece of paper or in a notebook. There's graphic recording, which is on a big mural that could be 4 feet, 6 feet wide. We do interactive murals, which are even larger, maybe 20 feet wide. And then there's whiteboard videos. So those are the different kinds of visual communication tools that we use. We use those at conferences, meetings, panels, brainstorming meetings. It's just really powerful. So if you're getting your ideas out into the world, having an illustrator there to bring those ideas to life is really powerful.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think sketchnoting is maybe a better way of taking notes than traditional note taking?
Sketchnote is actually way more efficient and effective than taking just traditional notes. There have been some studies that have been done that proves that typing your notes on a computer is not very effective. One of the most effective ways is to actually write them by hand, because you're using your hand, and so it's kinesthetic learning and auditory learning. But sketchnotes is also visual learning. So sketchnotes are really effective because it pairs information and illustration. So information just by itself is really forgettable. There's been a couple studies done where people forget content about 60% of it 3 days later after they hear it. So if you pair an image with information, the retention rate is so much higher. So having visual notes is more effective because it allows people to remember the information. The picture related to the information helps you remember the information.
That's good.
Later. It's like, yeah, the conference was great. Oh, what'd they talk about? I don't know. It was good though.
That sounds like every phone call with my mom.
Yeah, exactly.
My wife would be like, so what's new with your mom? I don't know.
Stuff.
We've been talking for like 45 minutes. Yeah, I don't know. So with sketchnoting, I've heard you say that a big component of that is active listening.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about that and how someone can learn to be a better listener as it pertains to drawing and sketchnoting?
Yeah, active listening is all about focus. So you have to eliminate distractions, which means putting your phone away, not just on silent. It means sitting in a place in the room where you're going to be able to focus. So maybe you're moving away from kids that are going to be coming in and out of the row often, or maybe you move away from a vent that's going to be blowing on you and making you cold and hot throughout the event. Active listening is also about your own focus, but it's also about being fully focused on somebody else. You're not looking around the room. You're not paying attention to what's happening. You're completely focused on the speaker. I say active listening is like filtering out yourself, your head and your heart. Like head-to-hand listening is what I call active listening, because it's coming in through your ear and out through your hand. You're not thinking about the information. You're not feeling it. You're not wondering how it makes you feel and what you believe. So you're filtering yourself completely out. It's just going from the stage to the page. Whereas normal listening, like what we do when we go out to lunch with our friends and they're telling a story and we're sitting there looking at the menu like, oh, that's nice. I think I want the salmon. But you have no idea what they just said because you're not actively listening to them.
That's good. That was a great answer. Can you connect that with sketchnoting?
Yeah.
With a statement?
Yeah.
You jumped right into active listening, and I want to make sure that we can connect that.
Yeah. I'm going to start over. Taking sketch notes requires active listening, because you can't take effective notes if you're not listening to what the person is actually saying. You have to filter out your own beliefs and your own opinions. Otherwise, you're just taking notes for yourself, whereas sketch notes are really shareable. If you're going to be sharing the information, you want that information to be unbiased, and you want it to be as clear and present as possible. It should be an accurate representation of what was actually shared, not what was shared plus your own thoughts and feelings. Otherwise, you're not really representing what was actually shared, because your own thoughts are on the notes.
So at this point, is it even possible for you to sit through a seminar or something without taking sketch notes?
Nope. Whether I'm at church or going to a lecture or even just watching a video or reading a book or taking a vacation, I will sketch note it.
I thought maybe. Speaking of books, can you tell us about your book that you have coming out?
Yeah.
What's the premise of it and what you're hoping to achieve by the book?
Mm-hmm. My book is coming out in January of 2019, and it's called The Art of Visual Note-Taking. And my whole goal with the book is to take people who are interested in visual note-taking, who say they can't draw or they have really messy handwriting, and take them all the way to novice. I don't know anything about sketch notes, to, okay, I'm confident and I'm comfortable and I have all the tools I need in order to do this. So the book is all about taking them through the basics and the foundational skills that they're going to need to take effective sketch notes.
So how did a book come about?
The book kind of fell into my lap, actually. The publisher approached me and they said, hey, you're an expert sketchnoter. Would you like to write a book? And from there, it was just a no-brainer. Of course I want to write a book on it. I'm crazy about sketchnoting.
That's cool. That's a fun opportunity. So,
and apparently that doesn't happen. So,
yeah,
yay!
Were you ever expecting to write a book? Was that ever in your thoughts, or was that just kind of something that
no,
when you ran with it? Or
I never planned to write a book. I had thought about maybe writing a book one day after I had way more experience, but I have enough experience to teach people who don't know anything. So I went to a writing conference last year in Franklin called Tribe. Jeff Goins puts it on, and I went mostly so I could work on my writing, blog posts and articles and newsletters teaching people. But by the end of the conference, I kind of had the book idea in my mind, but then I still didn't really think about it. But then 2 months later, the publisher approached me asking if you'd like to write a book. And it was actually really serendipitous that I had gone to a writing conference and made all these book connections so that I felt enabled to write the book and have all the tools I needed and people I needed to do that.
It's fun how God's timing works out like that, isn't it?
He's sneaky.
So how did it make you feel when you got a book deal? It must have been exciting. Like, can you talk about your feelings when that popped up?
Yeah, when I got the email from the publisher, I was really excited, but I was also really skeptical. It felt like a thing that was too good to be true. So, okay, is this publisher for real? I haven't heard of them. Does that mean that their books aren't legit? So kind of stalking the publisher online and seeing what they're all about, finding the people on LinkedIn and stalking them to see if they're legit. And so it's like I was finding reasons for it not to be interesting because it sounded too good to be true. But after talking with them, it sounded like a really great thing. And now we're here and we're about to publish it.
It's cool. It's exciting. So is there any, so I feel like a big narrative of your story is just, and back to that opening statement, that you didn't stop drawing after childhood.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's a lot of people out there that have probably given up on a certain passion or something they used to be passionate about as a kid or whatever that looks like. Can you give a closing statement to all those people, whether it pertains to drawing or anything in particular, just encouraging them
yeah.
to go for it? That's not too late, that type of thing.
Yeah, I might do a couple different ones
sure.
if that works out. I think if I had one message, see, I messed it up. Message. I think if I have one message for people, it's to pursue your passion no matter if you think you're good at it. So I'm a professional illustrator and I'm not qualified to be a professional illustrator because I don't have the credentials. I didn't go to illustration school. I didn't take that formal figure drawing class, but I'm still able to do it because I put in the work and I learn and I adapt and I'm always looking for ways to help people with what I can do. Not necessarily saying yes to the things that I'm not capable of. So finding your niche is the most important thing.
That's good. Love it.
You're like, right. We're not going to use that one.
No, that's great. They were all awesome. Seriously, you're doing amazing. I could never do what you're doing right now.
So. Don't say never, because you're probably going to have to do it.
Season three.
Yeah, you have to have an About the Filmmakers episode.
We'll see. We're good for the interview portion.
Yay!
Now you get to draw.
Yes!
Thanks so much for checking out Get to Know Nashville. For more great content like this, visit gtkn.tv. And follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Get to Know Nashville.